Welcome to HW Goes Back to the Future. Today's guest is a friendly face on the Harvard-Westlake campus that comes with a wealth of knowledge in admissions and advancement. His experience at the top schools in the country at the elementary, high school, and collegiate level gives him an understanding in the admissions process at every stage. In addition to his work in admissions, he is currently the Harvard-Westlake Director of Alumni Relations and Senior Advancement Officer roles that keep him heavily involved in campus and in the community at large. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Lee.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Perfect. Let's start at the very beginning. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Northridge, first in Koreatown, and then in Northridge, and my parents still live in the same house that I lived in when I attended Harvard School.
That's nice. And then where'd you go to elementary school?
I went to three. I started at a school called Wilton Place, which is in Koreatown, and then another school in North Hills called Gled Hill, and then I transferred to a magnet school in fourth grade called San Jose. The elementary schools back in the 80s ended in sixth grade, and so I came directly from San Jose to Harvard School.
And then how big was San Jose?
Wasn't too big, or at least the magnet program probably had two sections of, 20 or 25 kids. I think the school itself was pretty big, but it might be 100 or so. And, at that age, everything looks big to you. So
why did you come to Harvard-Westlake from there?
I don't know the whole history, but the research was done by my parents. And my parents, as a lot of new immigrants did back then, they looked for opportunities for their kids. And one of the best ways to provide resources for your kids is to find the best education. And so when they asked around, especially in the Korean immigrant population, everyone concluded that the best school for boys at that time was Harvard School.
Perfect. So when you got to Harvard-Westlake, is there any experience there that you really felt like inspired you later on, really helped you from there on?
I thought the experience was quite a transition for me. So I think in that respect, it was sort of a transition to greater opportunities. But academically, it was challenging. And then I think socially, it was challenging too, because to come from a public school where most of the kids were middle class to lower class to come to Harvard, where most of the kids were, wealthy enough to pay for tuition, which back then was probably only a couple of $1,000s, but it was still expensive. To come into an environment where people had access and resources was quite a challenge. And so even though it was a challenge, I think the inspiration was for me to become better, both, academically and socially, and to think of greater opportunities professionally in the future.
Perfect. So when you kind of went to Harvard-Westlake and you experienced it all, what did you feel like you really maybe missed out on something? Like, what would you tell any student that came here afterwards?
Well, I went to the boys' school, so oh, yeah. One thing I definitely missed out on was girls. So that was a no-brainer. It's hard to say. I think there were so many opportunities. A lot of us played sports, and we were able to play three sports because you didn't have to specialize back then. And, I was involved in the Harvard News, which was, the newspaper back then. And so I don't feel like, if anything, looking back now, I mean, I feel very fortunate to have such a great high school experience because there were so many things I was able to get involved in. And I didn't really feel like I missed out on much except girls and a social life in that respect.
Well, what did you get involved in?
I played football, basketball, and baseball. And then basketball, I stopped in ninth grade because I wasn't growing and I wasn't as skilled. But football and baseball were my two big things. There's great memories for both sports, including some of the coaches, Coach Tron and Coach Carlson, who were memorable throughout all the decades. And my baseball coach was Jim Brink, who passed away about 3 years ago, and he was a memorable coach and teacher. He was also my chemistry teacher. So, I was involved in sports. And with the Harvard News, with the newspaper, I was actually the sports editor by my senior year, so it all made sense. But I was involved with community service outside of the school and with our church, a Korean church. So, you know, I was involved both at, you know, at the school as well as outside.
So you kind of talked about it a little bit, but just coming from immigrant parents and everything like that, and coming from the Korean church, do you feel like you had a different outlook on your experience at Harvard Westlake than most people come, or at Harvard, than most people coming in?
Definitely, because there were a significant number of Jewish kids and obviously non-Protestant kids too, or not religious. And so being an immigrant, you also brought a different perspective. And so there were times that I did feel like I was not part of the in-group, but at the same time, around the mid to late 80s, there were a decent number of Korean kids who came to the school. So I think, I don't know exactly why, because I don't know the admissions policies, but I definitely remember the admissions director, Elliot McGrew. Perhaps his strategy was to target certain populations that valued education and to try to promote it within those communities. So, you know, since then, you know, Harvard Westlake has only gotten more and more diverse.
That's great. So especially when you left Harvard Westlake, did you have any plans for the future or anything like that?
Besides going to college and
trying
to get a job.
Like, do you have any job plans? Like, did you know what you wanted to do with your life?
I think my experience at Harvard School made me think about going into education, because at that time there weren't many Asian American role models among the faculty. There was Mr. Sasaki, who was here up until last year. He just retired. And maybe one or two other teachers of Asian descent. But it made me think, oh, it'd be great to be a person in a school where you can make connections with young people and people who are eager to meet people who are just like them or can relate to their experience, particularly with their parents and the struggles that come with it. So that sort of fortified my interest in education. But I knew I didn't want to teach because that's a lot of work. And so I learned as I went through my college years and just doing research that you could play roles at an independent school while not teaching. And that included admissions and, you know, community service and eventually advancement.
So you talked about just then about how you kind of want to relate to the struggles that some of these people go to. What do you think the struggles are that Asian Americans especially go through, even going to Harvard Westlake itself, like today?
Sure. It's hard to know what the struggles are today because I'm way beyond those years. And it's a different era where I think being Korean or being Asian or you know, Chinese, it's sort of cool now. And there's like K-pop and several other things that are popular in the mainstream. And so, you know, Korean food's incredibly popular. And if you go to Koreatown now, most of the restaurants are populated by non-Koreans. And so it's hard to compare the time now to what we went through then. But I think, you know, when you're dealing with two different cultures, and so it's not just for Koreans, but any immigrants or people of a different culture, if the predominant culture that exists for your day-to-day life at school is different than what you experience at home, it's hard to manage that. And your parents have a hard time understanding some of your interests and your values when they're changing and evolving because of your peer group and your school values.
So do you like the fact that it's kind of shifting to people liking Korean food and liking people liking K-pop?
Yeah, I think it's great for any community to have an appreciation for things that are not similar to who they are. So I think, you know, I think kids these days are exposed to a whole different different value system. I mean, something as simple, I think right now, people who are of different backgrounds or sexual orientations or gender identity, I think those are things that would never have come across in our Harvard School environment. And in fact, I'm sure anyone who was gay at Harvard School, you know, they had no thought of coming out at all. And there were a lot of, it was a different era. It wasn't just Harvard School, but in the 80s and beyond that, you know, there was no tolerance or understanding of people who were, you know, different than the mainstream. So I think it's great now that Harvard Westlake has all these different opportunities for kids to identify with different groups.
Perfect. So a lot of times people talk about high schools, maybe like this time and they're kind of closed off and they feel like they're kind of outsider, but then they talk about college as like a time of, you know, really relating to everyone else, this haven, safe haven for everyone. Do you feel like college was that time for you? Like, what was the transition like from Harvard to college, even just like academically, like all parts of your life?
Sure. I think I had the common experience that every Harvard or Harvard Westlake student does when they go to college, which is that college is really easy. You know, you have a lot more free time and getting A's you have to work for it, but getting B's is not very hard. And so the education background, the academic background here at Harvard and Harvard Westlake was awesome and continues to be. Students are incredibly well prepared. And the transition, I think it depends on, everyone's different, and it depends on what type of high school experience you had. And so I think some people really find a great community here, and then when they go to college, some struggle to find that niche or that network of friends. And while others may feel that they're not too connected in high school, and then when they go to college, they find some of their passions. And so I think it just varies developmentally where you are in your life, both in high school and in college. And for me, I think both high school and college were, you know, challenging experiences because of sort of the dual identity I had to play with both the immigrant culture and just the mainstream high school or college culture.
That's perfect. So how do you think that struggle just affected your everyday life?
Yeah, that's it's a deep question. And I think it might have, the way it was shown is perhaps in my peer groups. So for example, when I went to Brown my first year, I hung out with a lot of the baseball players because I walked on and I made the baseball team. And so my peer group was mostly, Caucasian. A lot of them were recruited athletes, which I was really surprised to see at an Ivy League school. But I think it was pretty common then. I just wasn't exposed to it. And I think it's more common now. And then when I quit the team after my second year, then my peer group started to become more Asian and people who had similar immigrant background as I did. So I think that's where it's reflected, sort of my struggle in understanding who I am and what's important to me.
And so once you left college, you find yourself kind of trying to find these same communities that you found in college? Like people with the same experiences that as you?
Sure. I think in everything I've done since college, I've connected with a Korean community as well as an athletic sports culture. I think those are two areas of affinity for me. And so even in the job that I do right now, we have a lot of different affinity groups in the alumni community, but it's easy for me to try to engage alumni through athletics. So, for example, we just did a varsity boys alumni basketball game this past Saturday. It was the first time we did it, I think, in a while, and that was easy for us to gather and communicate to the alumni community to get involved because it's sort of a natural interest of mine.
So, yeah, why sports?
Well, it's just something I'm drawn to and I follow, and there's not a sport that I don't enjoy watching, I think. So, when you go to the East Coast, back then lacrosse wasn't popular in the West Coast, so you get exposed to lacrosse. Ice hockey was huge at Brown, where I went for undergrad, and so ice hockey became and my roommate actually in my freshman year was a ice hockey player from Canada, and so it was easy for me to go to games and become a big fan. And so all the sports that I became exposed to, even the new ones, I was drawn to, and those are things I still enjoy watching or competing in.
So I always heard, and I don't know if it's true, that generally athletes are the people who give the most money back. If so, is it true? And if so, like, why?
That's actually not true.
Really?
There's no trend in terms of, athletes, former athletes giving more to the school. I think perhaps, colleges may may focus on it a little bit more because there may be, college athletes who go pro and they have successful careers and then they could give back to the school. But in general, I wouldn't say that former athletes give more or less than the typical alumnus or alumna.
Learn something new every
Yeah,
day.
why, where did you hear that, or
I don't
what makes
even
you?
know. I just always believed it. This is just like a fact. I was like, okay, this is A or B follows A, and college athletes give back to their college more. Wow.
Yeah, I think what we've seen for alumni, I mean, people, you'll be surprised. There are those who have been super involved with the school, but perhaps, yeah, it's hard to know why they're not as connected after the fact, but you'll be surprised at the ones who are really loyal, because there may be some who had a hard time here at Harvard Westlake or got into trouble all the time, or like, for example, John Amato, who's been, who was at the school forever and was the lower school head during my time. Like, a lot of alumni are drawn to him, but they know him because they got into trouble all the time, but he was their advocate. And that's why we have loyal alumni who had mixed experiences in their high school years, but they appreciated the adults who were in the community to help them along their journey. So I think that might be a more common thread than whether someone played sports or not. But there are those who obviously were very involved, were prefects, were involved in the Chronicle editors, and they're super involved at this point too.
So when trying to get people to give back to the school, is there anything that you like specifically touch on? So do you remind them of their days of being in the Chronicle, or even like their times of getting a little bit of trouble? Like, is there anything you really try to bring up to get them to remember the good old days?
Teachers do a great job in terms of bringing back memories. And so this past spring, we had Mr. Corsello, John Corsello, who's retiring this year after 40 years. We had him write a letter to alumni to support the school, and we had a great response to that. Not only in terms of financial support, but people writing letters or emails to say how much John meant to them. So that was really nice to see. But that is a It's a no-brainer when it comes to engaging alumni to bring teachers back. When we do regional receptions, whether it's in New York or San Francisco, we often try to bring faculty with us because those are the people that alumni want to see. They don't necessarily want to see professionals who are paid to fundraise or to engage in some of these receptions. So,
Teachers are the people we spend the most time with, so
absolutely. So
we should.
who are the people who've made a difference in your life?
Oh, there were so many. Okay, wait, this is not how it works. No. Back to you. How do you get people to be re-engaged with Harvard Westlake, especially if they drift apart? Do you just send them letters by teachers? Like, is there any point when you're like, I'm not getting to them? Maybe don't contact them anymore? Is there anything like that?
Yeah, there's a range of alumni involvement, and obviously, if you live in Los Angeles, it's much easier to be involved than if you live in, Colorado or, internationally. But we have a pretty sophisticated alumni relations program, and we do all sorts of activities and events based on industries and affinity groups. And so, whether you're interested in like real estate or finance, arts and entertainment. We have a alumni with young kids group because clearly, if you have kids, you will be interested in having your kid possibly attend Harvard Westlake. So we've engaged alumni in all different capacities. I mean, we could do a better job going around the country and around the world, but we are starting to do that a little bit more. And because some of our current students and families are from Asia, we've spent a little bit more time in Asia the last couple of years. And alumni and parents of alumni have come to some of these events.
Why are you going to Asia to get new students for Harvard Westlake?
No, the students are, they find us because of our reputation, because it's international. But we'll find that many current students, one of the parents may be working in places in Asia or internationally. And so they'll spend half the time in China, for example, which is a growing area. And so when we have relationships with parents, it's especially during some of the holidays, whether it's spring break or winter, it's easy to meet up with them in places like China or Korea or Hong Kong and Japan. And while we're there meeting with parents, we also have these community events. So we invite alumni and sometimes parents of alumni who have either lived there during their time as parents or have moved out to those places. So you'll find Harvard-Westlake people everywhere. If you wear the Harvard-Westlake, if you wear a Harvard-Westlake T-shirt or hat or somewhere, someone may come up to you and ask you what your affiliation is with Harvard-Westlake.
All around the world, you can't escape us.
That's right.
So I know you also worked for admissions. So how do you choose the next Harvard-Westlake students who are going to be around the world, who are going to be representing us, who are going to be wearing the shirt?
Sure. I haven't done this for 10 years, so it changes all the time. And but the one thing for sure that hasn't changed is the competitiveness and the selectivity of admissions. So it's tremendously difficult to get into Harvard-Westlake, and there are a lot more applicants than spots available. So I think it's a challenge for the admission office to find, you know, the best kids for each class. I think we talk about talent and the most talented kids, and so that can be defined in many different ways, and so it doesn't have to be the smartest kids or the kids who get the best test scores or have the best grades. And so, you know, talent, I think nowadays is defined more broadly. And so hopefully we're seeing it in the student body that obviously everyone is motivated and wants to do well, but some may value, you know, like performing arts or athletics over their academics, or they may be interested in doing more leadership or journalism or the Chronicle or podcasts. So, you know, we do value all the different talents, but when you put them all in an applicant pool and you have to compare numbers and GPAs, it's really quite a challenge because you could fill the school, you know, two or three times with people who would do just as well as students who are currently here.
So how do you identify talent, especially in an application when it's just like paper?
Sure. It's actually a really good question because the committee, the admissions committee, not to get too detailed, is comprised of a lot of different people, including deans and, you know, upper school and middle school deans and admission staff. And so people will see talent in different ways. And that's why the conversation that happens in an admissions committee meeting is it's deep and it's thoughtful, and there'll be arguments over this type of talent or this type of talent or which is more valuable, and people are coming to it with their own perspective on it. And so when I was working at Georgetown University at the college level, what often comes up is your own personal experience. And so if there's a applicant who resonates with you and your own experience, then you often advocate for that type of person. It doesn't happen as much at Harvard-Westlake because they're, you know, elementary school age kids, and so it's harder to relate to that. But, you know, for example, at Georgetown, you know, there were people who there was a professor who loved like Eagle Scouts because it showed like commitment and longevity. I think that professor was an Eagle Scout too. And there are others who, for example, they hated math and they weren't very good at math, and so they will, because they will forgive sort of lower math SAT scores, but value verbal and anything like the writing, anything more humanities oriented. So it is really an interesting mix. There's no mathematical equation when it comes to admissions, and many families want to know how do you get in or how to prepare, and it's quite impossible to explain to someone how it's done and, you know, to predict whether someone will get in or not, you know, just based on numbers.
So do you feel like the difference between, obviously, sixth grade for, or I guess seventh grade for Harvard and Harvard-Westlake, and college, the admissions process is different? Like, how much do you think it differs?
Yeah, there's a huge difference because there's more information when someone's a senior versus someone who's in sixth grade. So you can also, I think, at the college level, you know, they care about certain talents that they're recruiting for, especially athletics. And so they will know if someone's talented in, you know, basketball or soccer. And so they may, you know, forgive in other areas, whether it's SAT scores or GPA or, you know, class rank. At you know, the elementary school level, I think you can predict or kind of get a sense of how talented a musician someone is, but it's harder to fully predict the trajectory based on a 12-year-old or an 11-year-old.
So yeah, what scores and what like things you look at when you're looking at a 12-year-old who is like this child, and how do you tell what they're going to be when they're a senior in high school or all the years leading up to that?
Yeah, this is all, they're all educated guesses, you know, when you admit people and you base it off of, you know, the quantitative measures are, you know, the grades and the ISEE scores. But obviously we get a lot of information from teachers and their recommendations. Many of the schools in the local area we have relationships with, and so we can get on the phone and call the head of, you know, X school and ask questions about how this person is or what type of potential or, you know, what type of character this student has. And so we could do some, you know, I guess analysis or research prior, but again, with any decision that's made in the admission process, it really is an educated guess on how they're going to do. Because some people, you know, they have great numbers, but they may, you know, not fare as well. I think there are a lot of schools that talk about grit now and resilience, and if there was a way to measure that, a lot of schools would use that measure. But that there is nothing, you know, there's nothing out there for that. But, you know, people care about whether a student is resilient. So when they get their first B in their life or when they get their first F in their life, you know, how are they going to respond? I mean, that's more important than getting the B or the F in and of itself or getting straight A's throughout your school years, because at some point in your life you're going to face adversity and how are you going to react? And I think that's something that many schools, both independent high schools and colleges, care about.
So how should a student show they're resilient to a college or even to a high school?
Well, you're assuming that they need to show that, but I think, you know, when people do their essays or when there's teacher recommendations, I think, you know, our deans will reference things like that. So what people have overcome or some of the challenges they've faced, and I think it provides a context to help understand the entire, you know, applicant and the context for that person's experience. And so it would shed light on whether, you know, why they may have done poorly one year. Perhaps, you know, their family went through a divorce or there was a death in the family. So there are different things that I think a student may not need to show or explain through their application, because the deans or a teacher will reference it. But often, you know, if it's a meaningful experience like a tragedy, then often students will write about it too. So
so when you're looking at a student and you may see the student with like all A's, but maybe they didn't do as much activities, which one would you say is like, would you more let into Harvard Westlake, or obviously if you could get both, but like if you see one with all A's, but maybe they don't do as many activities, or you see one person with like some A's, but they have some B's, but they're really into one thing. Like, do you really look for the passion in a student, or how do you balance a well-rounded versus one who really has one interest?
Right. So the answer is that we want both, you know, or most schools want both. So I know that it's always the question of, do you want someone more academic with less activities or someone who's super involved with less grades? And so obviously they have both. But again, that I think depends on the person who's evaluating the student in the admissions committee. I think teachers will tend to care more about the grades and whether that student will perform and, you know, do their homework and follow up with them. Whereas if a coach is involved or, you know, the head of the orchestra is involved, then obviously he or she will want the talent in that field. So, you don't want a school or a class that's all academic. So clearly you need to balance it out with people who are involved in many things. And so hopefully they do both, and they're also nice citizens to the community.
Exactly what we want in Harvard Westlake.
That's right. So hopefully you have friends who are like that, and you are clearly like that. So that was my first impression when we first met.
Thank you.
So you made me proud that you're a Harvard Westlake student.
See, the admissions process is doing fine. So what trait do you think has been helpful for you, especially not only working in admissions, but alumni? Like, you got to, this has been fun because you got to see the before and after.
Sure. And that's great for me when I get, when I'm out there at events or in New York, there are people I remember admitting. There are students, I distinctly remember their application and who they were when they applied. And then I see them now as, I guess some of them are in their late 20s. And actually in the, at the alumni basketball game I referenced, there were a few kids who were the class of 2011. And I remember some of them applying, but in fact, I coached them in eighth grade football. And then now they're grown, you know, men who are working in the field and having successful careers. So it's nice to see that from sort of when they were 12-year-olds to being, you know, 25-year-old men in the community.
That's insane a little bit. So, like, you were talking about how some of the applications really stood out to you and how you remember them today. What made them stand out to you? Like, what was memorable about them?
Some of them are the risks that you take, people you really want to take a chance on. So let's say it could be, let's say it resonated with me, like an immigrant who maybe didn't have the resources, so the test scores may have not been as high because the person didn't have IC prep like many of the other students do. But the grades were there, the teachers love him, he or she impacts the community, the school community in a tremendous way. So those are sometimes the long conversations we've had in the admissions committee. And because you are taking chances on people, and they may not have the traditional markers of success, which, you know, maybe GPA and test scores. So, but there's always, you know, an occasional fun or funny application. You know, kids may submit a funny photo or, you know, occasionally an essay may be interesting. But yeah, it really... every year is different, so there are always surprises, and there are long conversations about all different types of people.
Harvard West, like, so diverse.
That's right.
Exactly as you want to be. I was just what I was going to say. So you kind of talked about the admissions process already and, like, how you go through it, but is there anything very specifically that, like, you probably get this question all the time, that people should do if they want to, if they feel like they want to get an extra, like, step foot in the door or anything like that?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's something they should do.
Or even better, is there something they shouldn't do?
Yeah, occasionally people, applicants or parents, more so parents, become known in an office because they are very active in communicating with the office, and so, or they're very eager to have their child get in, and so sometimes that's good. It depends on their approach and how they communicate with the office. But you know, families become memorable, and so sometimes that could work. It's something they should be doing because then they'll be remembered. Or if they're coming off the wrong way and they're too aggressive or annoying the office, then obviously it's not something you want to do. But, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to give advice. But, I mean, I think for kids, I think it's important to be authentic, you know, because there's a lot of prep involved these days, whether it's test prep or interview prep. And so ultimately, you want to showcase who you are, not what you think you should be to get in, because ultimately the person who attends the school is the student, whoever he or she is. And so when they come in for an interview, you want them to be themselves, and so they can show like the interviewer and the school who they really are. So
is there any, like, most important part? Like, do you feel like the ISCE is the most important part, your GPA, your interview, or do they all kind of work together?
I think in general, I mean, GPA is probably the most strongest predictor of success, and so that's why it's easier to take a risk on someone who has good grades with low test scores than the opposite. You know, if someone has high test scores but low grades, it means that the person is okay getting low grades. Whereas somebody who has A's all the time, even if this environment is a huge jump, he or she has the work ethic and the grit to work hard to try to achieve those A's. That's the standard the person already has. as a sixth grader or an eighth grader, depending on what grade they're coming in.
And then to go back a little bit, you talked about your immigrant experience, especially since your parents are there. Do you think it changed how you looked at admissions and like kind of helped you and gave you an eye that no one else had?
Definitely in terms of understanding the immigrant experience. But I think it's more common now, and there are a lot of people who have an experience where they didn't necessarily grow up in the U.S. or had a different upbringing. And so I think it's, you know, I think I appreciate my perspective, and I'm willing to express it, whether it's an admissions committee or alumni conversations. But I think given today's the types of people who are involved at Harvard-Westlake, it's not that unique to have an immigrant or a different perspective.
That's just how I like it. Thank you. I think that's it. Well, actually, one more question. Thank you so much for being on the show. But what song brings back strong memories of Harvard-Westlake?
So New Wave was big back in the 80s. And so and I don't know if it was as mainstream, because I think classic rock was popular among the Harvard School boys. But I was into New Wave. And there were groups like Depeche Mode and Pet Shop Boys and other groups like that, which you probably don't even know. I've never heard of.
Yeah. I was like, okay.
But there was a song by New Order called, it was called Bizarre Love Triangle. So it was like it's got a dance beat. And so whenever it was played at some dance, even though it was awkward with like Marlboro or Westlake, you know, girls, I distinctly remember that song. So.
That's perfect. Thank you again for being in the podcast.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
It was great. Okay.